Hello and welcome to another edition of the Byron York Show, the No Chit Chat podcast, brought to you today by the Bradley Foundation. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but today I want to talk about two things. I want to talk about COVID relief for a while, and I put COVID relief in quotation marks, and I want to talk a little bit about the Lincoln Project. You may remember the Lincoln Project. It was this virulently anti-Trump group of former Republican operatives. There's an update on what's going on with them that's pretty interesting. First, though, COVID relief. And I think the quick way to say what I want to say is it's not COVID relief if they want to make it permanent. I mean, we all hope that the coronavirus pandemic will end and that American life will return to normal. And there are encouraging signs that that will happen. And if you are pressing something you call COVID relief, but you want to make it permanent forever, then it's not really COVID relief. That's the situation you have with the bill that Democrats in House and Senate have just passed and President Biden has signed into law. So go back for a minute to start this off. Go back for a minute to the Senate runoffs in Georgia. You had the two seats up for runoff races in Georgia, and the victors of those seats, the winners of those seats, would control the Senate. If Republicans won just one of them, they would have controlled the Senate. But if Democrats won both, they would control the Senate, and darn if they won both. So back during that campaign, Charles Schumer, the Democratic leader in the Senate, who stood to become the majority leader if they won both races, he very famously said, this is a quote, "Now we take Georgia and then we change America." Put an exclamation point after that. Now, Republicans pointed out at the time, they may be making changes you don't really want to make. You don't think are a good idea. Schumer and his Democratic colleagues are planning to enact far-reaching changes in American government if they win even the barest control of Congress, and in fact, they did. Okay, so they won Georgia. They took Georgia, and now they're trying to change America. The most effective, the first vehicle for doing this is this $1.9 trillion, quote, COVID relief, end quote, bill. Now, we know that a lot of it is not about COVID relief at all. Only about 9% of the spending, about $265 billion, goes in expenses that directly aid in the fight against COVID. Now, that includes things like vaccine distribution, testing, protective equipment, that sort of stuff. Now, huge amounts of money, and we're talking like $750 billion or thereabouts, go to individuals and to state and local governments that may or may not have suffered economically during the pandemic. You may have seen a couple of weeks ago, New York Times published a story, and I'm going to read the headline here. "Virus did not bring financial rout that many states feared. Grim forecasts held up for a few states, but many more took in about as much tax revenue as before the pandemic, and sometimes a lot more." I mean, there are a bunch of states that increased their tax revenue during the pandemic. They do not need relief for lost revenue during the pandemic because they did not lose revenue during the pandemic. The same is true for some individuals. Now, it's clear, I mean, the COVID crisis was devastating economically for those who lost their jobs or those who lost their businesses. There were millions of those Americans. I mean, you saw the unemployment rate just shoot straight up. And fortunately, it's been falling down quickly. But it shot straight up. People suffered a lot. And they needed government assistance. They lost their jobs or their businesses, not because of anything they did, but because of this incredible, astonishing pandemic that descended on the world. So, they needed COVID relief. But this Democratic bill, and obviously I should say, the House and Senate and President passed a good bit of COVID relief, both in early 2020 and the spring of 2020. And then later in 2020, they passed another one in December. There was this bizarre backup deadlock on COVID relief in which Nancy Pelosi basically blocked it until the 2020 election. She denied it, but that's what she was doing. But anyway, the government has passed a good bit of COVID relief that hasn't all been spent yet. But this Democratic bill, here's another phrase, showers money on Americans. That's from the Washington Post. Showers money on the Americans, regardless of whether there is true need or not. I mean, you can look at all sorts of things. There's $86 billion. That's a lot of money. $86 billion to failing union pension funds. And this money is not a loan to those funds. It is not conditional. It doesn't require the pension funds to improve the management practices that resulted in their failures. It just gives them money. So that's a lot of money, and it showers money on Americans, whether they need it or not. One of the things that has not received enough attention in this bill, except from a few wonks like Mickey Kaus and others, is the welfare portion of the new law. It enormously increases the child tax credit. It expands the earned income tax credit. It creates new programs for child care, and it increases long-term unemployment benefits, and it increases food assistance. Now, the welfare provisions, one thing that's really notable about them is that they remove, and this is not a bill, this has not been proposed, this is passed and signed into law. They would remove the work requirement for federal aid that was a key part of the 1990s welfare reform under President Clinton. It was a key part of that. Now it's gone. And these welfare portions really reflect the changes in Democratic ambitions for the bill. I'm going to read you from the Washington Post here. Quote, "At first, Democrats described their $1.9 trillion stimulus as a response to a once-in-a-century economic and health emergency. But then the language began to shift as something much different, an anti-poverty measure with few precedents in U.S. history." Read that again. "But then the language began to shift to something much different, an anti-poverty measure with few precedents in U.S. history." So is it COVID relief, or is it an anti-poverty measure with few precedents in U.S. history? Indeed, instead of talking about COVID, listen to them now. Some Democrats tout the new law as a way to, quote, cut child poverty in half. Now, there's nothing wrong with Congress debating a measure designed to cut child poverty in half. Voting on a measure designed to cut child poverty in half. They've done that many times. They've worked on measures involving child poverty. There is nothing also wrong with Congress debating a measure to remove the work requirement from federal aid. There's nothing wrong with Congress doing that. It's just not COVID relief. The fact that so much of this new law is not COVID relief is highlighted by the Democrats' intentions to make those welfare components permanent. As it is, in the law as it's just been written, they only last for a year. But if Democrats have their way, they will last forever. All Americans hope that the COVID pandemic passes soon. There are encouraging indications that life will return to normal, but Democrats want, quote, COVID relief, unquote, to be a permanent part of American government. Okay, I'm going to read you from a Politico story. Democratic lawmakers are exploring ways to ensure that generous tax credits and other key aspects of the legislation will last well beyond the pandemic itself, either through additional rounds of extensions or more permanent measures. Still quoting here from Politico, Democratic lenders are banking on some of the aid provisions being so popular that letting them expire would be a political nightmare. Okay. In short, the idea is this. Take these long-term Democratic agenda items, sell them as, quote, COVID relief, and then dare Republicans to challenge them in an election year. Now, if Republicans do challenge them, if they do pledge to let, quote, COVID relief, unquote, expire, then portray them as heartless. That's the plan. So go back. We started with Senator Schumer. Let's go back to Senator Schumer. Remember, he pledged to change America if Democrats won the Senate. Well, on Sunday, he appeared on MSNBC, and he was arguing that, quote, COVID relief should be forever. So the host, Jonathan Capehart, asked Schumer, are you going to push to make the tax credits and other benefits, are you going to push to make them permanent? Schumer said, absolutely. That's one of the most important things we can do. We can change America if we make them permanent. So that's the idea. Make COVID relief permanent. But if it's permanent, it's not COVID relief. That's just a plain fact. So just wanted to talk to you about those things. Get a better, clearer idea of what is COVID relief and what is not COVID relief out there. And I told you I wanted to talk a little bit about the Lincoln Project, and we're going to talk about that after a few words about the Bradley Foundation. If there's anything the events of the past few weeks and even the past year have shown us, it's that the country is at an inflection point. Ronald Reagan had a saying, freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction, and that has never seemed so true as right now. Political divisiveness in our lives, riots and looting and the cancel culture are all antithetical to the values upon which America was founded. Americans must ask now how to restore, how to strengthen and protect the principles and the institutions that make us exceptional. Now, as we navigate through these unprecedented times, We the People, a Bradley speaker series, offers insights and ideas on the current challenges we face from some of the most remarkable organizations that the Bradley Foundation supports. Now visit bradleyfdn.org/liberty to watch the first episode of the 2021 season. It features Kay Coles James, who's president of the Heritage Foundation, and she shares her thoughts on the state of our republic, how to ensure the integrity of elections, what it means to be conservative, and how to advance freedom and free enterprise. So go to bradleyfdn.org/liberty. Now that is Bradley with an L-E-Y, fdn.org/liberty. So one more time, bradleyfdn.org/liberty, and you can watch the video. New episodes will debut every other week, so come back often and subscribe to their YouTube channel to be notified whenever a new one is posted. Okay, I told you I was going to update you on what's going on in the Lincoln Project. So, first of all, go back to the glory days. Long, long ago, when Donald Trump was president and the Lincoln Project was attacking him every single day. They received glowing coverage in the press. These are former Republican operatives who turned against President Trump. They received absolute glowing notices. I mean, they were the subject of loving profiles on 60 Minutes and the New Yorker, Time, NBC, CNN, much more. Some of them got cable news commentator contracts. And most importantly, millions of dollars in donations poured into their fundraising operation. They had a very aggressive fundraising operation. If you were on it, you got emails just all the time. Give us money, 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 money. They were the heroes of the resistance. You can go look around Twitter and the like. You'll see just how glowing and loving and adoring the coverage of the Lincoln Project was. Of course, that was then, years ago. Now Donald Trump is gone, and the news in Washington is filled with what the new Biden administration and its Democratic and allies in Congress are doing. We just spent a bunch of time talking about the new COVID, quote, COVID relief, unquote, law. life has moved on, as it always does. Now, what that means is the Lincoln Project is no longer useful to the media outlets that spent the years from 2017 to 2021 attacking Donald Trump. So now, amazingly enough, the Lincoln Project is receiving some of the scrutiny it should have received all along. And a picture is emerging, a picture of an organization that is beset by scandal and is run by people determined to enrich themselves from all those Americans who sent small and large donations to the project's campaign against Donald Trump. Now, first of all, conservative media broke the story that one of the project's founders, a longtime Republican operative named John Weaver, had allegedly sexually harassed dozens of young men online. Now, some project leaders denied that they knew about Weaver's actions, but we've seen documents that strongly suggest they were, in fact, aware of what was going on with the Weaver situation. But the Weaver situation was never the main story about the Lincoln Project. The main story was always money. The project raised around $90 million, a lot of that from small donors, people who paid $20, $50, $100 every now and then to the Lincoln Project. From the beginning, critics, not including reporters at big media organizations, asked, where is the money going? Was all of it being spent on these anti-Trump ads? I mean, it just didn't seem possible. They would do these very clever ads hitting Trump in ways that were, you know, sometimes so aggressive Democrats themselves wouldn't do it. One reason Democrats loved the Lincoln Project was that they would hit Trump in ways that they felt queasy about. So you looked at all these ads, many of which made their biggest impact online, of course, most of which were designed to personally provoke Trump in the hope that he would perhaps tweet something about them and then there'd be a lot more donations. That happened a number of times. But you asked, they raised $90 million. Did they spend it all on these ads? Okay. In the last couple of months, it has become clear that millions of dollars and possibly tens of millions of dollars went to the Lincoln Project's main founders. There were four of them. Former GE Republican operatives, Steve Schmidt, Rick Wilson, Rich Galen, and John Weaver, who we just mentioned. Now, the New York Times has published the results of a new investigation. And remember, the Lincoln Project is no longer useful as a weapon against Trump and is now receiving the critical media attention it should have received all along. New York Times has this story, quote, inside the Lincoln Project's secrets, side deals, and scandals. So the paper reported that there was this core group of the project, Schmidt, Wilson, Galen, and Weaver. And they had, quote, agreed to pay themselves millions of dollars in management fees, end quote. The plan was to funnel the money from the donations to Galen's political consulting company. This is longtime Republican operative Rich Galen. Funnel the money to his consulting company, and then to themselves. So this is quoting from the New York Times again. Over time, the Lincoln Project directed about $27 million, nearly a third of its total fundraising, to Mr. Galen's consulting firm, from which the four men were paid. End quote. So that's from the New York Times. Quoting again from the Times, whatever their political goals, they were also privately taking steps to make money from the earliest stages and wanted to limit the number of people who would share in the spoils. That's kind of interesting because you will see people who were referred to as co-founders of the Lincoln Project. For example, George Conway, the anti-Trump lawyer, is often referred to as a co-founder of the Lincoln Project. This makes it really clear that there was a core group of four, Schmidt, Wilson, Galen, and Weaver, and the others were not really in the most inner group. Okay, so they set up this system in which the Lincoln Project pays money to Galen's political consulting company, and then from that, the four insiders are paid. So who gets how much? Now, the Times could not figure this out. Quote, it is not known how much each of the four received. So how much of that $27 million did each of the four receive? Quote, their private arrangement shielded even from other senior officials the size of the individual payments. Okay, so they really, really covered this stuff up, made sure that even other people in the Lincoln Project couldn't find out about it. Now, when these questions are first raised about this, the Lincoln Project reacts defiantly. Quote, we fully comply with the law, Steve Schmidt said in February when the Associated Press first reported some of these financial details. This is Steve Schmidt again. Quote, the Lincoln Project will be delighted to open its books for audit immediately after the Trump campaign and all affiliated super PACs do so. Okay, so in other words, if Trump does it, then we'll talk, but not before. Assuming, of course, that Trump would never release such information, so they won't have to either. There's little chance, I think, that the founders are going to open up about this project's finances. We heard in another news report that Schmidt had reportedly said that he hoped to gain, quote, generational wealth from the Lincoln Project. They wanted it to be a $1 billion media company. They wanted to have a television show, podcasts, and all sorts of media enterprises going on. They could just see this. I mean, and why wouldn't they think that? They had gotten such loving coverage when they were slashing at Trump every day. Why wouldn't they think that? That they could create a profitable media company and all become stars and raise, just make millions and turn it into a $1 billion media company. That was the idea. So now that has come crashing to the ground. A number of them have left. Steve Schmidt has not actually left the project. It's been reported that he had resigned, but he actually resigned from the board, but did not actually resign from the Lincoln Project completely. Others are gone. We don't know how much money they're raising now, but it's going to be hard to keep the anti-Trump flame alive and burning when Trump is gone. Now, it's still a good idea to know where the money went. Where did this all go? Because remember, they were asking you for money. Please send $20, $25, $50 to help us fight Donald Trump. Please. Where'd it go? At least one former top Lincoln Project member fears that we'll never know. The public will never know where that money went. This is George Conway. I mentioned him before. He's a lawyer. He's sometimes called a co-founder of the Lincoln Project. He's clearly an insider of the Lincoln Project, but he has quit. He says that he never received any payments at all from the Lincoln Project. And now he's been distancing himself from the Lincoln Project. So he wrote, after this latest New York Times story came out, quote, the Lincoln Project should shut down, absent full disclosure of its finances. As this detailed story shows, meaning the New York Times story, there's simply too much money that has not been accounted for, and I fear never will be. So that's George Conway on the Lincoln Project. I think that's what you call distancing yourself from the Lincoln Project. So the question is, will we ever know where all this money went? We do know that attacking Trump was just enormously profitable for the Lincoln Project. There was a whole lot of money. Certainly not all of it was spent on the ads. most of which made their biggest impact online. And I don't know if there's any legal issues involved. Groups like this tend to start fighting each other, and sometimes information comes out as one side attacks the other. Wouldn't be surprised if that were to happen in this case. But there's still more to learn. I think the bottom line is there's still more to learn. But I wanted to update you on what's going on with the Lincoln Project, because it's much, much different from those glory days of the summer and fall of 2020. Seems like years ago, in which they were riding high in the subject of adoring media profiles. Now, not so much. So listen, thank you for joining us for this edition, and we hope you'll join us for another edition soon of the Byron York Show.